There's a lot of talk right now about artificial intelligence, including offerings like ChatGPT, which in theory can research and write for lawyers. But many lawyers have concerns, and perhaps the biggest one is the work generated by AI accurate? And if we're being realistic, there are probably more than a few lawyers who have no idea how the technology works. I'm Stephanie Francis Ward, and on today's episode of the ABA Journal's Asked and Answered, my guest is Greg Sereb. He's a technologist who has many thoughts about AI, and he's also a lawyer and the founder and CEO of Extegrity, a company that designs testing software for state bar exams and law schools. Greg, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Stephanie. Nice to be here.
Yes. So my first question for you. Let's say that I am a litigator and I'm curious to see how the technology works. What would be some good litigation tasks for me to play around with just to see how things work?
So you've dived kind of into the middle of this conversation, and I really feel like there needs to be some basic explanation of what we're talking about here. So you mind if I do that?
Okay. Yeah, go ahead.
All right. So an AI system, it's obviously something people are hearing about daily, right? And what is it, right? It can generate amazing art. It can manipulate photos. Everybody's concerned about deep fake videos, things like that. It can let Frank Sinatra sing Led Zeppelin. And I will give you a sample of that.
Scooby-Dooby-Doo-Doo-Doo, and she's buying a stairway to heaven. There's a sign on the wall, but you ought to be sure, because you know sometimes what that don't mean.
What we're talking about for text-based work is something called an LLM. And we're not talking about the advanced degree from law school. We're talking about, in this case, but only for lawyers. We're talking about the large language model, which is a kind of software. So what does that mean, right? That means that this software is designed to take in or ingest unbelievably huge quantities of written work, which is called the corpus. And it'll look for patterns and structure in that work, and then it will store information about what it finds, and then it'll use that, all of that, to generate novel responses to prompts. So the specific tool that does this is called a GPT, which is as in ChatGPT. And what is that? It'd be nice if it stood for general purpose something, but it doesn't. It actually stands for Generative Pre-trained Transformer. So it's taking all this information, you're asking it a question or giving a suggestion, and then it's generating a response. So why is this all of a sudden big news? Because computers have been able to do that for a while. It's the combination of the gigantic corpus and advanced processing capability and good algorithms and storage. And all of a sudden there's a critical mass, and it can really give us something that can pass a bar exam.
If I don't know anything about the technology, what would be some ways for me to kind of play around with it and see how it might help me do my job more efficiently as a litigation lawyer?
Sure. So the thing that it can do is it can take a question or a suggestion that you give it and come up with what sounds like a really good, reasonable answer. What it struggles with is detail. And so this is where you have to, at least with the general tool like this, like the current GPT, you have to be careful about what you ask it. So if you're going to just have, if you're a litigator and you want to try it out, by all means, you can get an account. It's free and you can really ask it whatever you want. But it doesn't have access to cases, or statutes, things like that. And so it's not going to really be able to do, you know, it's not going to write your brief for you in a convincing way because it doesn't have the underlying information and it just can't make it up. So what it can do, for example, is if you had a large document from a large set of documents for discovery or a transcript or something, it can read that. You can enter it in. It can read that and it can give you back a summary and help you find patterns that it's finding. So if you're writing a short explanation of some kind of situation and you have a mess of notes or you've written a draft and you just put that all in and ask it to make sense of that for you, it can do it. It can give you an outline. It can suggest how to approach research. Right now, it can only do these very general things. But when you can have access to tools that have added in the body of law, the cases and the statutes and the journal articles and every place else that you go for actual legal information, then that's unleashed, and it really will be able to do a lot for you.
When would that be, do you think? How long? A year?
There are already a few tools out there, and I have zero doubt that people are madly building more. Any specialized field, and not just law, medicine, finance. Bloomberg has an AI out that's specialized for finance. Salesforce has one for customer resource management. I mean, this is happening. We're in the middle of it, and the progress is staggering.
I want to go back to an example you gave. You said that they could, the technology could summarize a DEP for someone, because I would imagine that's probably an associate task, would be to summarize a deposition. Yeah. Or if you're a smaller shop, you have to do it yourself. So you could put in like the transcription of the deposition, mm-hmm. and it would summarize it for you. How can you be sure it's accurate? How can it pick up tone?
Well, it will definitely do a summary, and it will do it in seconds. You can have control over what you ask it. And if you ask it well, for example, I mean, you have to be subtle about your prompts. And this is sometimes referred to as prompt engineering. And there are tricks also. So for example, if you ask it to answer as an expert, if you ask it a legal question and ask it to answer as an expert in law, it's going to give you a better answer than if you just ask for an explanation. If you say, give it to me in bullet points, answer step by step each stage, what will happen? It has limitless patience. If you don't like the way it answered, you can ask it a different way. And it's incredibly fun to try it. And again, I urge people to sign up for one of these. There's other ones besides ChatGPT. Meta has one. Google has one. And really just get into a conversation with it. And then imagine that it actually had the underlying information, the specialized data that underlies the profession. It's only a matter of time.
Do you know, I have not signed up for ChatGPT. Well, I tried it a couple of months ago when there was a wait list. Do you know if the wait list is picked up or shorter at this point?
I have not heard of anybody waiting. I actually plunked down it's $20 a month, I think, for an account, and I've never had it hesitate.
And what's the website for that?
I think you could just Google ChatGPT. It'll take you right there.
In another option, and I can speak about this with a little bit mm-hmm. of knowledge, is I was asked to test Drive's ChatGPT, mm-hmm. or however, whatever the terminology would be. Sorry, it's not ChatGPT, but the AI. So you can just...
Bard, I think it's called.
Yeah, it is. It's called Bard. Sorry. Yeah. So for those, that purpose, and I don't know if, I'm assuming it's still available to people, what I do is I just open Drive and the icon is there. So it is my reaction as a somewhat older person is this is probably a lot easier than I may have thought it was initially. There's really not much to it.
There's nothing to it. It's not much different than doing a Google search, but you could use it in that way. And the limitation is that it doesn't have access necessarily to current material. What it does have access to, you'll get a response like, my information is only good through September 2021. This is when the model that you have access to was given all of its data. And so it's got a lot. It's got all of Wikipedia. It's got tens of millions of web pages. It's got this thing called the Common Crawl, which is kind of an interesting, is it 500 gigabytes of text just skimmed from the internet? It's a lot of stuff, but it's not everything. And what's interesting is it doesn't, for example, have the Declaration of Independence. Somehow there's a copyright limitation on that. I don't understand that, but that's what I'm reading. However, it does have the Constitution, but it doesn't have the Magna Carta. So there's gaps. It doesn't have Don Quixote. You'd think it would. So it's drawing from an oddly limited cross-section of information of the world. And a friend of mine who's in this business said, think of it as a really, really smart 10-year-old. Right? It may know a lot of things, but it doesn't necessarily know how they fit together. And it's going to give you a confident answer, but not necessarily know whether that's a good answer. And so to get decent feedback from it, you have to be thoughtful and creative about how you ask questions and ask them in six different ways. And the thing is, it's got, as I said, endless patience. It doesn't get mad at you. It's unbelievably polite. And for somebody like me, I mean, I disappeared for hours in there just asking questions and going in different directions. And more than anything else, it's a lot of fun.
So if you don't mind, pick a task that a lawyer might do, but is tedious. What would be a good example for that?
So when there is a tool that is optimized for legal work, there's no doubt you'll be able to put in in addition to having the access to cases and things, you will also be able to put in your own stuff. So let's say you're a contracts person and you have your firm has a repository of, you know, hundreds or thousands of contracts that you've written or ones that you have access to. You put them all in and you can guide the algorithm to give you responses that you like. And all of a sudden it's writing your contracts exactly the way you would, because it's learned from yours. And, you know, to do one yourself when you could just ask the AI to do it, why would you? Right. Now, that said, you'll want to, you should think of it as an editor, not as a writer, because you will need to take what it gives you and look it over. You have a responsibility to do that. But as they get better and better, I think people will need to do less and less. And this is only a matter of, I would say, a few years.
Well, and do you think that the larger firms now, they probably have something like that in place?
They're grabbing it as fast as they can, I have no doubt.
Yeah. So say you're not a larger firm and you don't have access to that, but you just say you want to try something, let's say Bard, because that's what I know. What is like a simple task that you could use the technology that we have now?
You can use it to organize and edit your own writing. But with ChatGPT or Bard or Llama, it's going to be referencing the large mass of information and not the specialized things. That said, let's say you wanted to create a writing that was in the voice of your boss, right? If you could give the AI samples and then say, here's something I've written, can you please re-render this in my boss's voice? It will nail it.
So in other words, could you put in like a graph that your boss wrote and said, my boss wrote this, can you rewrite the following graph in her voice?
Effortless. It will take seconds.
That prompt would work.
And it will really startle you. And again, I mean, my examples might sound a little trite, but if you would like it to sound like your boss, but if your boss was a pirate, it would be out in a second. And it would sound exactly like your boss if your boss was a pirate. If you want to sound like a particular Supreme Court justice, if you want to sound like your adversary, you could make it happen. You just need a few samples.
You could write it like opposing counsel.
Totally.
Or you could write it like the judge.
You could write it like the judge. The judge will be warm to that.
Well, I am curious because I think bosses who are heavy-handed with the editing might also be the type of personalities that are don't want you to use the technology. So I'm curious if they'd say, oh, this is wonderful. Or they might be like, oh no, this is not what I wanted.
What we're going to see, generally speaking, is that this will be as commonplace as a spell check. It will just be writing. It will be how you write. And people who don't use it to make their writing better, it'll just be a surprise. I mean, who wouldn't? This will be just what you do. Now, that is for sort of generalized writing. And again, I may make this point over and over because I'm having trouble explaining it because I'm really just literally just wrapping my head around it now. When it needs to be specialized, a couple of things have to happen. It has to ingest the specialized sources, right? The cases and case law and legal stuff, right? There have to be really good instructions for what it gives you back. This is software, has to be designed with instructions to give you the kind of writing you're looking for, right? So so ChatGPT or Llama, they're not going to give you a brief. But if you have specialized software to interact with these sources and you train it how to do a brief, it'll give you a brief. It has the sources. It knows how to do it. This is what we're waiting for. The general tools aren't there. The specific tools are coming. They're right there around the corner, and they will do this. This is what people are building. This is what I am building. So, and then there's two more things that have to happen. The AI, the artificial intelligence, needs to be reinforced, right? So you bring in experts to look at its answers and say, no, this answer needs to go this way. You need to do it like this. And the training sticks. It never forgets, right? And then finally, the users need to be good at their prompts. So they need to be guided on proper prompt engineering. If you have those four things, which you will, ingestion of specialized sources, fine-tuned instructions, expert training, and guidance on prompts, you will see that there will be really no limits to what this can do.
Well, and back to our prompts, something maybe a little bit less controversial or easier than, say, write like my boss. You could say you're writing a memo and you're struggling to be precise with the language you've been given to explain something, but not like have it. You don't want it to be five paragraphs. So you could put in what you wrote to the technology and say, condenses to half the size. And it wouldn't. You just have to check to make sure what was rendered was accurate.
You can ask it to rewrite it in any direction you can think of. Make it longer, make it shorter, add information about this. And it will give you an array of results that you, I think, can then either edit yourself, or you may find that the result it's giving you is one that you like. But you do have a responsibility, an obligation, as an attorney, to make sure that what it actually said was true. This is, I think, where people may get into trouble. You can't be lazy. You have to do the work and you have to know what you're doing, and it will help you.
But it sounds like what you're saying is maybe in a couple of years you could be lazy because there'll be more authoritative sources.
The better you get at it and the better it gets, then yes, that will probably happen.
I was curious too, is there a concern among lawyers that if they upload their work into something, they wouldn't be protecting attorney-client privilege?
I think that, like many of these questions, it kind of depends, right? Mm-hmm. I don't think right now there's a mechanism to be uploading into the LLM that these AIs are using. But it's a question, right? Are they continuing to ingest the things that people are bringing to it? And believe me, people are bringing a lot. I read somewhere, I don't remember where it was, something like 1 in 6 adults in the US has asked an AI a legal question.
Oh, wow.
I'm not sure where I saw that, and I can't vouch for that, but I did see that. I do remember seeing that. Then 1 in 6 jumped out at me. And of course, people are madly typing in, you know, every question they can think of. And the question, of course, is the quality, right? I mean, it's learning from what it has access to. So if you want good stuff, you have to put your own stuff in. And I think for that, if you have your own account for an AI system that's an expert system that's tuned for your field or for the law, and the companies that will be selling these will say, you know, your space is yours, and they're not going to put it anywhere. But if you're just going to ask the public AI a question, it's kind of like, you know, you put something in Facebook or you put something in Twitter. I mean, it's just out there. But if you're paying a provider, specialist provider, for an expert system, sure, that's a private system.
At the end of the day, do you think when these private AI offerings are available, will they be equal to or better than, say, what's offered by Google? Because Google has a lot of people working on this.
Right. So you'll be using Google's AI or OpenAI's AI via something called an API, which is an application programming interface, which is basically your system is attaching to that larger system using its intelligence. And then you are adding a couple of things that I mentioned, right? The additional specialized sources plus the fine-tuned instructions, which are built into your extra tool, right? Plus the training it's been given, right? Plus the prompts that you give it. And those things together will get you an incredible result, but you're actually leveraging one of the existing large models.
And it would probably have a security piece, right?
That's it. Yeah, that's exactly right.
Okay.
Yeah, you'd have your own like private garden, but but the soil will, you know, connect under the ground. That's a ridiculous metaphor, but it sort of works, right? You're part of the biosphere, right? Uh-huh. But you have your own walled garden.
Right, but the roots are spreading out. Yes.
Yeah. And it's absorbing the nutrients from the soil, but right. only you can eat the plum.
All right. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, I want to ask you your thoughts on how the air piece can be improved going forward with the technology. We'll be right back.
Be the best resource you can for your Spanish-speaking clients with the Spanish Group's Legal Translation Service. Experienced translators ensure accurate translation of your documents with same-day delivery. Confidentiality is ensured, and the Spanish Group guarantees acceptance for certified translations. All that, and their rates are competitive. If you need other languages, the Spanish Group translates in over 140 languages. Mention Legal Talk 20 when you request your quote for 20% off your first translation. Visit thespanishgroup.org.
Delegate out those tasks that take up your time. Staffy can help you with your legal, administrative, marketing, and even client-facing workload. Hiring Staffy's top-notch bilingual virtual staff means Staffy does the recruiting, hiring, and training for you. Then, if you need a change, Staffy handles it. You get to concentrate on your strategic work. Schedule a free consultation at staffy.cc. That's STAFI.cc and get $500 off with code HAPPY24.
And we're back. I'm Stephanie Francis Ward, and my guest today is Greg Sereb. He is a lawyer and president of the law school and bar exam software company, Exegrity. So, Greg, as we said earlier, a really big concern from lawyers is the AI piece that comes with the technology of AI and legal writing. How do you envision technology being able to make it what's offered much more accurate?
Well, for sure, we need specialized tools. And we've talked about this a couple of times. The gist of it is that the source material that ChatGPT and others are using is very broad and not that deep. For example, I just discovered within the last day that one of the large pieces of the body of material that ChatGPT and others are using is something called books corpus. And you think, oh, it must have tens of thousands or millions of books that are public domain. And that's not actually true. It's actually only a few thousand unpublished books, and many of them are like sci-fi and fantasy. So, you know, it's got all of Wikipedia, but, you know, we all use Wikipedia, and it's Wikipedia is fantastic, but it's not always that detailed. Depends on the topic. It's got many web pages that it's found, but millions, tens of millions, but this is very general information. And so you can't put together a brief from general info. It doesn't have the cases. It doesn't have the analysis, and it doesn't have the statutes. It doesn't have any of that, not reliably.
Do you see a way that perhaps there could be software that would red flag things you should check?
Software that has ingested specialized sources will be able to do this.
Okay.
Yeah, will be able to do this.
And back to Wikipedia, it is great, but I'm personally, as a journalist, and I'm sure this is certainly true for lawyers as well, I would never cite Wikipedia.
That's not a site.
I would use it.
Yeah.
Right. I'd use it as a guide. But if I sent a Wikipedia page to the copy desk as part of the fact-checking process, they would be very upset. So, but you can use it as a guide about where to look. Right.
And considering that ChatGPT and others are using those sources, and it's really just sort of a pre-chewed set of that data that you can ask questions of, and it gives you a conversational answer back. So it's kind of like that info has come somewhat alive. What it isn't is an expert, especially not on the law. No way.
And I was curious. I have heard that something that especially young lawyers kind of struggle with. It's the table of authorities. And I've certainly heard that law students struggle with that. Could you use ChatGPT in some way to do that? Maybe you could even use it to format it, because I've heard even the formatting is hard for law students.
It is not trained in that and would not do a good job. It may be able to cursorily put something together, but if you gave it info to work with, but whether it would do it right, I would say probably not at this point. And it's not that kind of system. It is a general system, not an expert system. So anybody that did that is asking for it.
Okay. From your work with law schools, what is your take on how law schools and academics generally feel about AI and students using it and professors?
Well, there's the first thing is there's concern. People imagine that it will be used to cheat, and it can be used that way. If you've got a paper you've got to write or a take-home exam, when nobody's watching you, you could ask ChatGPT or the others a question with that information. If the answer requires detailed knowledge of precedent and cases, statutes and such, it's not going to give you a great answer. However, if you give it a fact pattern and ask it to sketch out an approach to an answer on this, it could do pretty well. And we've all seen those reports where where it passed the bar exam, but you got to look at the kind of question. It's a pretty general question. It has certainly got some grounding in legal concepts because those pervade the information that exists generally in the world, right? There's a lot of discussion. If you've got billions of sources, some of them are legal and it will access that. So it can take a simple question and give you a reasonable answer, but it depends. And I couldn't tell you with specificity which kinds of questions it would do better or worse at. But generally, I would say general questions, general rules of law, it'll give you an okay answer. It's organized. It is orderly, right? If you would like it to outline an answer, it will give you a great outline of an answer. But if you rely on it completely, you're going to be in trouble.
Maybe if you have a hard time writing and you are disciplined, could the technology teach you to write better? For instance, when you ask it to write a graph more succinctly, you could compare and see what it did. And if you like it, like remember it moving forward to use less words.
It's an amazing writing coach. It writes pretty well. And you can ask it to change its style. You can ask it to help you formulate an analysis, and it'll do a really good job. And it'll give you options. There's no question about it. And really, one way, if we do think about it as kind of ultra advanced spell check, that's fine. But within those limitations, you're going to get really great responses. And I think people's writing can be better, and it should be better. I've seen a lot of written responses, and it can be, you know, I don't want to pick on anybody, but it can be a little surprising, and you know, what people write, and we can all do better, and it will help. And people should use it that way. Mm-hmm. But what the schools need to realize is that this is not stoppable. It's not containable, and it's just going to be the way things are, and it'll be pretty fast. But students are obligated, as are lawyers, to be correct. And if they rely on somebody else to, whether it's a natural intelligence or artificial intelligence, for correctness of answers, that's cheating.
I think for some schools that pride themselves on how their graduates write, like people that go to the federal clerkships, mm-hmm. there's a concern that if their students use ChatGPT, they will never know how to write. Is that a legitimate concern? I think that there's some high school seniors with very good mathematical minds whose parents bought them a graphing calculator and have probably since the eighth grade.
Yeah, that's got a, you know, this ship has sailed quality to it. You're not going to be able to really pull that back. And, you know, is it fair to say that automobiles, you know, reduced people's ability to, you know, to ride horses well? Yes, right?
Yeah.
I don't think we're going back. I'm an old guy, and I drive, my car has a manual transmission, which I've been told now is considered a millennial anti-theft device.
And hard to find. Yeah,
I won't give it. Right, I won't give it up. But it's mm-hmm. but it's, you know, it's an obsolete skill. So will writing well become an obsolete skill? I mean, gradually, probably, yeah. And what will have to replace it is having good judgment and knowledge and knowing when the writing is good. But you're going to get scaffolded with your writing.
But wouldn't it also be the creative piece? Like, for instance, if Justice Roberts has written for the majority of Supreme Court opinion, that's usually a joy for me to read, and I don't have to take notes because, you know, whatever his ideology is, it's so well written. Where with others, I mean, I definitely have to take notes and follow it, but for someone who writes really well and creatively in an appropriate way, is the technology ever going to be able to replace that?
It will be pretty much indistinguishable in most cases. Yeah. There's a popular YouTube channel which involves this guy, Rick Beato, who's a musician who picks apart songs and explains why they're great. It's pretty interesting. And I forget what the year is, but there's like a cutoff. Stuff after a certain point, he just doesn't like it. And we'll say, as an objectively seeming way, that it's just bad. I'm not picking on current music. There's some great stuff out there. There's no question about it. But there is no doubt that there is a qualitative difference between the music of the 70s and the music of the last few years. And as there's a qualitative difference between the music of the 1800s and the music of the 1900s, the underlying technology changes, people adapt. The culture shifts and people adapt. Are we talking about a cultural shift where something that seems as fundamental to the way humans communicate as writing will be augmented for us almost naturally? Yeah, that's what we're seeing.
So to wrap things up, if you have an employer who just doesn't want the people who work there to use the technology and you think it might be helpful to your practice or your work as a lawyer, what would be some good arguments to make?
I read an essay recently talking about why lawyers have to really embrace this. They don't have a choice. And the line they used, and I'm sure it's getting a lot of play and you may even have heard it, but the line is AI won't replace lawyers, but lawyers who use AI will replace lawyers who don't. And I think you can take out lawyers and put in any other field that is a knowledge-based field. I don't think, well, actually, it's only a matter of time till AI replaces even, you know, bricklayers. You create a physical device that can put a brick down and intelligence as to how to do it well, and it'll do a good job. That's true of bricks and it's true of law.
And what about the profit piece for private practice? As it stands now, large law firms make a fair amount of money off of billing their associates, right?
Right. So enormous efficiencies, there's no doubt. Things, especially like discovery and you know, basic contract writing, things like that, those are very amenable to automation. It'll reduce costs somewhat. Hopefully that'll mean that legal services become more accessible. In my career as a very young, recent undergraduate, you know, recently out of undergraduate, I got into this a particular kind of consulting, and I was an early adopter of technology. Simply being able to produce reports overnight from a letter quality printer in the 80s made me in high demand in a large city. I was one of very few people who was capable of producing this work. And that was pretty basic technology. But people would ask me all the time, how many people do you have working for you? And I'd say, oh, 8 or 10. But it was just me, because I could write it and produce perfect output the next day. And they were just flabbergasted. And that wasn't even the knowledge component of it. That was just simply the physical production of it. So this is the evolution of that. Now, the knowledge component of things will be streamlined and will be able to get done more quickly. And the firms that use it efficiently will do really well. One of the things I like to imagine is that it will encourage a lot of younger lawyers to go out into smaller private solo practice and go out into the community where people are clearly underserved by legal services and get out there and, you know, use the AI tools to make that accessible for people at a much more modest cost. If that happens, that's a great result as far as I'm concerned. Love to see that.
Well, but do you think for the firms that don't want to offer work at a modest cost, will they incorporate it into their way of doing business?
Well, they'll have to explain it to the client. I never worked in a large firm, but I have a sense of how things go. And I don't know to what degree they have to show them where their billing is coming from. But if you've got, you know, one, you know, smart young associate who is doing the discovery work that would have taken a dozen, or maybe not that many, maybe half a dozen other younger associates, and getting the same quality of work done, how are you billing that?
Well, and it could be that the clients demand it, as we saw in the early aughts, right, with e-discovery.
If I was a client, I would expect you to use the best, most efficient tools. And I just don't see how it can go any other way. That's the way technology's always worked.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you so much for joining me today. It was really great chatting with you.
Thank you very much. It's so fascinating. It does feel like, you know, drinking from a fire hose, trying to figure out exactly what's happening. But I would say the biggest mistake would be to underestimate it. And I've seen a lot over many years, but I never seen anything like this.
And listeners, thank you for joining us. If you like what you heard today, please rate us in Apple Podcasts. Thanks for tuning in to the ABA Journal's Asked and Answered.